This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
ACC preseason poll has been released by the league, and Alec Campbell, Clemson is the predicted winner.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
This is my shocked face.
Okay. Can you name the other schools that also received first place votes? Because they did get 125 of the 147 total votes. It's a majority, but those other votes, they got to go somewhere. So let's see how long you can go. What other schools do you think got first place votes?
I'm going to go North Carolina.
Yes, they got 16 votes. That's the second most. Again, Clemson, 125 champion votes as the preseason favorite. North Carolina, second among ACC teams with 16.
Okay, how about Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech did not get one.
Mm.
Not a lot of faith in Justin Fuente as he goes in, really among all ACC coaches, as one of the ones that's on the hot seat, though he could reverse that with a big win against the Tar Heels. Then remember that Friday night, opening weekend, you know, the Thursday will get you started, but that Friday night's a trap spot. 6 p.m. Inner Sandman in Blacksburg. I think North Carolina is probably like 10 points better than Virginia Tech, but that is not a neutral field at all. So that is a coin flip game. Okay, no Virginia Tech.
All right, how about Miami?
Miami did. They were the third among ACC teams. They only got three, though. So we're just down to a couple. Okay.
How about NC State?
Oh, yes. Yes. That's right. We've got an NC State preseason ACC champion. Now, listen, this is an ACC football kickoff and a reset of ACC football that has been very positive for the NC State Wolfpack in terms of where they're viewed.
You know, we got better tonight.
Yes, right. Thank you, Mark Godfrey. I think that what we are seeing as NC State, yes, they do pick up a preseason champion vote, but the more telling vote to me is the fact that they finished second in the Atlantic Division, which I think that for the purposes of ACC football suggests that there is more confidence, because truly NC State, Boston College, Florida State, Wake Forest, and Louisville, basically everybody above Syracuse is one big group. And you've got to be a good football team. You've got to have a good quarterback. You've got to have good depth. You've got to have things going in the right direction if you want to get picked to finish on top of a list of teams that all have a few question marks. There are less question marks around this NC State team from a personnel standpoint. There is confidence from what the reworked coaching staff was able to do, overcoming COVID issues in the middle of a pandemic, being able to pull that season together. I think that confidence around NC State football is at maybe a high point in the Dave Doran era, and that's why we see NC State as the second team behind Clemson in the predicted order of finish in the Atlantic Division. The rest of that division, BC at number 3, Florida State at number 4, Wake Forest at 5, Louisville at 6, and as I mentioned before, Syracuse at 7. North Carolina ends up getting picked as the coastal favorite. They get 109 votes, while Miami only gets 28. Virginia Tech did get some picks to win the coastal, none to win the whole ACC. They're third. Pitt at 4, Virginia at 5, Georgia Tech at 6, and Duke at 7. 4 votes for Georgia Tech to win the Coastal Division. I think they were all staffers. I think that sometimes on these ballots, like, have you talked to Jeff Collins much, the Georgia Tech head football coach?
No.
He's got a real intense energy about him, and he's all about his Waffle House cups that he's always got. He's a big football guy. And big football guys probably know that if you get a first-place vote, it tells your kids that you're a winner. And so you got to plant some first-place votes out there, start building some confidence with the kids. I'll say this. Georgia Tech might have a better team, but they have the worst or toughest schedule in the entire country. You line up every schedule 1 to 130 among all FBS teams. Georgia Tech's at number 1. They play 5 top 15 teams this year because they got Georgia, they got Clemson, North Carolina, Miami, and Notre Dame.
How's that team going to win enough games to make it to a bowl game? How's that team going to win enough games to win the Coastal Division? I think those were planted votes. I kid, kind of.
You know more about Jeff Collins than I do. Did not realize he was that kind of football-y guy. But I did find myself impressed with Jeff Collins' suit at ACC Media Days.
He's got good stuff.
He was wearing, like, the blue pinstripes, and mm-hmm. I'm like, because he does look very football-y, and oftentimes I'm expecting more of a disheveled look.
No.
But Jeff Collins was, he was sharp.
He's a good marketer, and he's a great recruiter. He's got Georgia Tech recruiting at a higher level than Paul Johnson did, noticeably. And the best players that you will see on Georgia Tech's team this year are probably like freshmen or sophomores or guys that he's brought into the program. But it's the toughest schedule in the country, man. I understand why Georgia Tech was picked to finish sixth in the preseason predicted order of finish. We'll get into a lot more ACC football. We've got Alec Campbell's grand declarations. I will go yay or nay a little bit later. But like I said, there's just a little too much to get to. So at ACC football kickoff, the biggest story of the summer in all of college sports broke out. And the ACC is just not really a power player. Okay, so to catch you up with the very latest, this morning, Texas and Oklahoma informed the Big 12 Conference that it will not be renewing its grant of rights agreement beyond the existing media rights deal. Wow, Chip, you just gave me a bunch of weird lawyery language. Well, yeah, because all these things come down to contracts. But what's happening is these are the initial official steps for Oklahoma to leave the Big 12. And what it does is it sets two different timelines. Number one, the timeline which makes it incredibly awkward for the next 4 years, because Oklahoma and Texas right now are going to be members of the Big 12 through the end of the 2024 season. So four more seasons of Big 12 football. That is the longest possible scenario. Today's news says, all right, Big 12, we're doing four more years with you, and then that's it. Now, does the Big 12 even want them to be around for these awkward 4 years? Or do they want to reach some sort of settlement or negotiation where they'll play Big 12 football this year in 2021, but then by 2022, they'll be playing elsewhere? Also, we believe it to be the SEC, but again, in some official, like, we got to go through the steps here. Oklahoma and Texas's expected arrival in the SEC, the next move is for them to apply for membership, the SEC to vote on their membership, and then they could become SEC members. And again, when that happens, based on today's news, is either going to be for 2022, 2023, or 2024, or at the very latest, 2025. So we have at least a timeline, and that timeline gives us the time to look around and say, all right, so what's next? Is the Big 12 going to add teams? Is the Big 12 going to be poached? Is this an opportunity for the Pac-12 to be able to expand? And again, the thing that has been standing out to me throughout this process is I don't think that the ACC is a player. Now, the ACC could become a player. Like, all of a sudden, you go out and West Virginia is the team that is mentioned. West Virginia is a school that makes geographic sense for the ACC footprint. There have been relations in past waves of conference realignment, obviously, that have not come to fruition. And they are just going to be left twisting in the wind if Kansas and Iowa State decide to go to the Big Ten, if Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, which had previous flirtations with the Pac-12 in 2010, decide they're going to go join, and all of a sudden we're going to be looking at a Big 12 that is just crumbling. Now, West Virginia could probably go back to the American Athletic Conference. That would be, you know, going back to the old Big East, essentially, facing off against some programs that you played as a Big East foe, among them USF. But it would be a huge boost for West Virginia to be able to land in the ACC. I just don't think right now that the ACC is a big player in this. And it's like great sports barroom conversation to think about your conference and, oh, we're going to trade this team and this team's going to leave and we're going to move them around. And you're almost playing a board game. It's almost like you're playing Risk out there. But I just think that right now the message, at least inside the ACC, is we are happy with our 15. And Jim Phillips, the commissioner of the ACC, as he said at the ACC football kickoff, he said Notre Dame knows how we feel. He called it less than bashful. So when the ACC says we're happy with our 15, they're saying the word 15 while batting their eyelashes and making a really pretty face. Because if Notre Dame wants to come and bring all of its football inventory and be a full 100% ACC member, then that's awesome. ACC is ready to go, and that is going to be their relationship until 2036. And perhaps it is that stability that's not all that sexy. Perhaps it's that stability from that 2036 contract that the ACC's got right now that is keeping them from being more of a player. The Big Ten is up for renewal soon. The Pac-12 is up for renewal soon. And the SEC, which we believe will likely be getting Oklahoma and Texas, just signed a new mega deal in the recent years. So all these other power conferences, they have the turmoil just because now's that time. It's time to re-up the lease. And the roommates are starting to fight. And we're having to choose some new homes right now. But I think that not being a power player in this wave of realignment is going to ultimately help with longevity for the ACC. So again, the news of the moment is that Oklahoma and Texas have informed the Big 12, all right, 2024, that's the last year, and if you want us to leave early, you just let us know, okay? But we're out of here at the end of this, and y'all figure out what to do next. So we will be keeping our eyes on the Big 12, and we'll be keeping our eyes on the SEC to see what's going on next. I was not furious or even all that upset by Team USA's loss to France to open group play in men's basketball. I thought that there were some bright spots, but there is one really, really glaring piece of the way the game played out that I think is going to potentially be the make or break accomplishment for this group. If this group is going to win a gold medal, they've got to figure out their own hierarchy. They've got to start to understand in crunch time minutes what's got to happen. Because what they did in the game at the beginning of the fourth quarter, France had gotten out into a little bit of a lead, and it felt like USA was reeling, just kind of hanging in the game. Start of the fourth quarter, this group of elite all-NBA talent and great athletes, they locked down on defense. Drew Holiday fresh off a title parade and just getting off the plane the same day as he's going to be competing in the Olympics gave some great, great defense. And what happened was an 18-5 run. And that 13-point lead switched it from France up by a little bit to the United States in total control. And they just could not buy a bucket. They didn't seem to have a good sense of this is what we're going to do. I don't know. Kevin Durant should be the alpha, but he was missing a bunch of his looks. And they were good looks. Dame Lillard missed some good looks. Like, looks that, watching it, I was comfortable with. But I think that while defeating Czech Republic and defeating Iran, the other two teams in the United States group for men's basketball, I think that that can be done just getting off the bus. But France is one of those few teams that not only do they have NBA players, Australia is the other one, right? Like Patty Mills all of a sudden just turns into a big-time alpha when he gets the opportunity or when he's asked to be the alpha. Evan Fournier, who we saw knock down the huge three-pointer for France there in the last 2 minutes in the win over the United States. They've sort of been declared within their team playing together year over year. Like, I'm the guy who does this. I'm the one who steps up to take these shots when the game's on the line. And this group for United States basketball hasn't figured that out yet. And they're tired. And the season, like, just ended. And I understand on, like, a human level, like, man, I understand why you guys look disheveled in the crunch time and why when things get really tight, y'all don't know what to do. It's because you really haven't been playing together. When Mike Krzyzewski really had it rolling, one thing that he did that was great and helped the United States is that, when you'd have the World Cup, or back then it was called the FIBA World Championships, you would try to have some crossover on the Olympic teams. Well, France, which, by the way, bounced the United States from the 2019 FIBA World Cup, so this is the last team to take them down, this United States team doesn't look at all like that one. That one had Kemba Walker. That one had Marcus Smart. So we really don't have any continuity with this particular group. players were getting scratched until the last minute. So I totally understand why it's a subpar performance. All that said, if they don't figure out who the alpha is and who takes over in crunch time minutes, maybe that's coaching. I kind of think that when you've got superstars, it needs to be almost among the team too. I mean, when you had somebody like Kobe Bryant in the locker room, when you had somebody like LeBron James in the locker room, that was not only an obvious, this is our guy, but I think that they also help empower different people, make sure everyone's on the same page. And I just think this team, you know, as much as I've heard the oft-repeated complaint that fans don't love how NBA players are all buddies. Like he's like, oh, back in my day, you'd never go to dinner with somebody on another team in the middle of a series and sort of pumping that up. Well, like they might all be friends, but that doesn't mean they know how to play basketball together. And so that's one thing that really stood out to me is that I totally understand why this group has zero cohesion. There's all of this long reason why, but you got to figure it out, man. It's the Olympic Games. We're off and running. And again, I think Czech Republic and Iran are going to be wins that can pretty much happen as long as they show up on time. But being a medalist will require some real growth for this team.
How awkward do you think it is for Devin Booker, who is on a team now with Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday? And I think they all flew over together.
They did.
Maybe it's not awkward at all.
No, I actually wasn't expecting much of Booker because that's got to be awkward. Because Giroux also had a great game.
He was their best player.
Yeah, he's come, like I said, right off the victory parade, and he's like, oh,
just
no.
Just dropped 18 points,
Coach,
and locked people down.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Let's go. I got this taken care of. Listen, after everything I just saw from him in the finals, well, I mean, he had some bad and some good in the finals, but the way things finished, when he showed up, I was, like, excited.
Well, and I don't know how Drew Holiday gets down or how Chris Middleton gets down, but is there also a factor of, like, I mean, I don't know if any of them Ovechkin'd the NBA title, the NBA championship title, right? But, like, yeah, you just came off a long season. Yeah, you just came off an NBA finals appearance, which you won. Yeah, you had to fly over to Tokyo. But, dog, you've been partying for, like, 5 days in a row, too.
I'm afraid that, like, a hangover, it's going to hit after the game. Like, they just showed up with so much energy.
Like, they should just be pouring champagne in Drew Holiday's Gatorade.
Hair
feel like.
Of the dog.
Yeah, just making sure that he stays even.
Yeah, I like that. So many, and that was just, like, one piece. Like, I was the dork that got up early and I actually do have a Peacock subscription, and I actually, like, logged into Peacock with my dorky Peacock subscription and watched that game. I was into it and very, very disappointed by the way things finished. But at the same time, I do understand that there's a lot of room for growth, and there is at least time before the next opponents who might be able to bounce the United States from their hopeful path of being able to be a medalist here at these Tokyo Games. Elsewhere from Tokyo, we're going to be getting into the Olympics and some fun stuff here throughout the show. But Katie Ledecky is such an iconic swimmer and such an iconic Olympian that the headline is that she finished second.
Mm-hmm.
That she only beat everyone but one is actually the headline. But a silver medal for Katie Ledecky in the 400-meter free. Here is Ledecky after the race.
I mean, I've experienced it before. I've, been silver at Worlds before. Of course, you always want to hear your national anthem. But, again, I'm proud of how I swam, proud of how I got to that point. And, it's not an easy journey. It's never an easy journey to the podium. And so it's not something I take for granted being up there. And again, it was just a tremendous race. It was a thrill to be a part of. I'm sure it was a thrill to watch. And I'm glad that we delivered.
Are you picking up or am I overreacting on just like this frustration throughout the whole Team USA camp?
Well, I mean, I feel like what's happening here is we've seen at least three programs that are supposed to be basically world dominators that haven't necessarily performed yet. One, the Team USA basketball, two, the USA gymnastics team, and now Katie Ledecky, who is by all accounts the greatest swimmer in the world. She happens to be an American. So, like, I think there are I think those three things are causing, because the USA has done well in other events.
Right.
I mean, they picked up a gold medal in Taekwondo.
I'm not being mean about this, but I think we got skeet shooting on lock.
Yeah,
that just feels like
we might have that. We might have 3-on-3 basketball on lock.
Right.
The Kalish kid, the swimmer, mm-hmm. Won the 400-meter individual medley the other night. So there are other places, lots of other places where Americans are doing well. But you've got, like, basically the places where we're supposed to just crush everyone where they're not doing as well.
I think that I am I'm willing to let COVID be an excuse, but here's why. Like, the Olympic training regimen is like a calendar. You know, it is so important to have different stages in your development, different times between different stages, trying to set yourself up for peak performance. And there's no doubt that at U.S. swimming, they've got that thing down to a science. One of the reasons why they get such great results. And I think delaying it a year, I think what they've had to overcome in terms of reworking their training program and following COVID protocols. I'm just saying that I'm willing to accept results that are not like every other Olympics, because there's no way that any athlete. And so whatever the norm is, might get disruptive. And if the norm is it's an event where the United States has crushed it, then, like, yeah, Katie Ledecky might take a silver. Where I think that if you really are getting into this, like, root for Team USA thing, then I think you also just hope that there's another event where maybe the United States hasn't always been awesome, that in the same sort of disruption where maybe they pop up and they get in on the randomness, maybe with a surprise gold.
I think that's 100% a factor. I mean, even with Team USA basketball, we've talked about this for Coach Pop. Like, they have a different FIBA schedule and that kind of got turned around from what used to be the case under Mike Krzyzewski. And then you throw in the pandemic on top of that. They just haven't been able to have the practice time, the continuity. I think all of that's a factor among many different things. But then it's just like you look at the players and you go, yeah, but you're still way more talented technically than everybody else. Or Katie Ledecky, you're still way more talented than everybody else. Or USA Gymnastics, you're supposed to be way more talented than all these other people, that you should be able to overcome some of those problems, and maybe that's just not the case anymore.
I don't know, they're competing too.
Yeah, and they're not doing poorly. Like, USA Gymnastics was second in the qualifying rounds, right?
Just, I mean, remember there's other teams that have been spending of their lives trying to get.
That's not how we do things, though.
Trying to get to here.
That's not how we do it. It's never about what they do. It's about what we don't do.
Oh, my goodness. Any other, we'll be touching on the Olympics throughout the show today. Any other events or anything stand out to you from the viewing experience?
I found myself watching skateboarding, the street style.
Oh, skateboarding was fun.
I watched 3-on-3 basketball, the women's side of it. Do those players, are these separate teams? I didn't even realize we had 3-on-3 basketball. Also, it's super fast,
mm-hmm.
but one of the things I like about it is that it's relatable. I mean, it's, you know, you got to take it back court.
Got to pull it out beyond the three-point line.
Pull it out beyond the three-point line. They play to 21
mm-hmm.
or whoever's leading after a 10-minute period. Super fast-paced. So I like that. It just has me wondering, like, can we get, like, 21 tap out in the Olympics? Can we get some of these other, like, you know, backyard, like, you know, driveway style games into the Olympics?
If everything I've seen from cornhole on TV suggests momentum, cornhole can be an Olympic sport here in the future.
Like 3-on-3 basketball, who didn't play that in their backyard with backcourt and all that? Now, I was surprised you don't get it back. It's not what do they call that, where you get it back if you score?
Oh,
right? Make it take it.
Yeah. I think that the 3-on-3 was good. I watched a rowing, which was really just a tourism ad for Tokyo, Japan.
Water polo.
I was like, that was gorgeous. Oh, water polo, which is hard.
Yes.
Water polo is hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like this is just there's a room for a longer discussion on water polo, because the wife and I had this discussion when we were watching it. Endurance-wise, it looks ridiculously
hard. Exhausting.
Exhausting. I don't really know how they do it.
And you're trying not to let, like, to both throw and catch
without
letting it hit the water. And you've got to either, like, kind of balance yourself while you're also working both legs to keep yourself above water. It's tough.
It is, man.
It's very, very tough. Will Brinson, how are you doing here on a Monday?
What's up, Chip? That phone charger has been 99.9 Studios since roughly March of 2020. So wasn't entirely expecting to be able to get it back. I would bet that thief Gilio stole it and took it home with him.
Unquestionable. That's got to be one of the places where we look first. Okay, so
yeah, Gilio's minus 120. I got Ovius at plus 175 to the thieves of my phone charger.
Yeah, and Ovius might just be accident, you know, just cleaning up the gear. So we've got the reports are kind of all over the place for the trade value and the trade market for Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson. And I guess, have you been able to get a sense of where you think it is based on the reporting, and then kind of the, like, where you think the next steps are? How are you, as someone who on the Pick Six podcast has to plan out talking about these things? I mean, sometimes with breaking news, I'd be like, okay, so let's game this out. How do we think this ends? What is the timeline? And when do I need to be prepared to record an emergency podcast?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, you know, Deshaun Watson demanded a trade. We, you know, the Texans were emphatic publicly and privately that they weren't going to trade him. You know, this is obviously several months ago. And then the allegations come out from, you know, multiple women that Deshaun Watson has engaged in, you know, what just unacceptable behavior. There's still determination about whether charges will be filed or whether, you know, he'll settle with these allegations out of court, whether it's going to end up being civil or criminal. I think what's interesting is that, you know, with the way that things came out today, with the news that the Texans are willing to trade Deshaun Watson and that they want three first round picks for him, I think it's not unreasonable to make some sort of small leap forward to expect that there could be a resolution in the Deshaun Watson matter, you know, the off-field issues. And because otherwise, why would the Texans put that out there unless they felt confident that Watson was going to get cleared? And I think the reason that things have changed, the reason the Texans are willing to trade him now is that, you know, they were like, no, we're going to hold off. We're going to hold, you know, we're going to, you know, stand our ground. And then they, you know, once the off-field stuff happened, they're like, all right, you know, now it's like, if we can trade him, and there still will be interest in people acquiring Deshaun Watson, they said, all right, let's see if we can do it. So, I don't think you can completely make that, you know, connect the dots there, but there has to be some sort of resolution before any other team is going to trade for Watson. You're not going to give up three first round picks for Deshaun Watson if he is ultimately, you know, going to be suspended 8 to 12 games to 16 games or whatever it is by the NFL, or even if he's on the commissioner's exempt list to start the year. It just wouldn't be prudent. So I think that's step one in trying to figure out what might happen with Watson. Step two is to figure out who might be interested in Watson. And I think there'll be plenty of teams that still are. You know, this is the NFL. Steve Keim once said, the Arizona Cardinals general manager once said that if Hannibal Lecter, you know, ran a good 40, he'd get drafted high. And that's entirely true. So bear in mind that these off-field things, while, you know, we don't know the veracity of them completely, but NFL teams are willing to overlook off-field issues for talent very often. I think that will be the case here. The Broncos make sense. I think the Panthers would still be in play. The Philadelphia Eagles have been heavily mentioned. And what it's going to take is some sort of combination of first-round picks and players. So you could look at, like, Drew Lock plus first-round picks plus defensive player, or, you know, Sam Darnold plus first-round picks plus defensive player. And so I think that's sort of the package you have to think about if and when Watson is cleared. Sorry, that was a really long answer.
No. So him showing up is basically, well, it saves money. He doesn't get fined. But
yeah. And he's showing up to training camp, and the NFL is not putting him on the commissioner's exempt list. And so he's avoiding being fined or avoiding the Texans being able to fine him. He is showing up, and the NFL is not saying, don't show up. So I think, again, connecting the dots, all of those things are interesting in the sense of how this legal situation will play itself out.
It's at least signaling to the rest of the NFL that
correct,
the idea that he is going to miss the 2021 season, we might be moving past that. Because I suggested, Alec Campbell and I were talking about it, the situation before the show, and I compared it to thinking like he was an overseas prospect in the NBA draft, where you're just drafting his rights, you know, where it's almost the term draft and stash, where you would be trading for Deshaun Watson, assuming that he can't play in 21, but because you stuck by him, then if he's able to clear everything and move into a different place where he is now, then he can be the face of your offense in 2022. It sounds like, based on, you know, connecting these dots, that the idea that he could be a starting quarterback in 2021 is looking more likely now than maybe it did a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And I'm not saying that I agree with, you know, it's a really weird tightrope to walk as a, you know, somebody covering the NFL, because A, you don't know exactly what happened with any of this stuff. And then B, you know, you want to, you know, give the proper deference to these allegations that have been made, but you also have to look at the football side of it. And just to me, if Deshaun Watson is, if he is showing up for camp, and if the Texans are then leaking out that they are willing to trade him, and that, and the asking price is still the same as it was before these allegations, I mean, you know, it should lead a reasonable person to believe that there could be some sort of resolution of the Deshaun Watson matter off the field on the horizon. And so if that happens and, you know, the NFL decides, hey, look, there were no, you know, ultimately no charges filed. Ultimately, these civil cases were settled out of court. We've decided not to suspend Deshaun Watson. And they still could. Remember, they did it with Ben Roethlisberger many years ago before, you know, without any charges filed in court. But, you know, that we would have a full resolution is the point. And if you have that full resolution and the Texans have decided they're willing to trade him, Deshaun Watson's going to get traded and he's going to end up playing for somebody next year.
Do you, when you're looking at like the training camps across the board, do you think that the players have sort of moved into really understanding like what all the protocols are? And because I can't bring myself to think about the job of trying to photograph the wrist of every single Tampa Bay Buccaneer and then trying to like correspond that to figuring out what the protocols are. But there is some competitive advantages that are definitely going to be afforded to teams that have higher vaccination rates. How have you been handling sort of these first opening stages of the beginning of training camp?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. The NFL, you know, Frank Reich, the Colts coach, just announced he's going to miss the beginning of training camp. He has tested positive with COVID. He's vaccinated. He's asymptomatic. There will be, I would imagine, plenty of yelling on both sides of, you know, and look, there's going to be lots of
in like, this climate, yelling? No way.
In this climate, I thought everybody's chilling, cool. The NFL is, this is not a stance on anything other than what the NFL is telling people, telling the players and telling people around the NFL, in that if you look at these protocols and you look at what vaccinated players have to deal with versus what unvaccinated players have to deal with, both in training camp and then into the regular season, the NFL is making it very, very difficult for unvaccinated players. And yes, you can still have a breakthrough infection, positive, whatever they call it. You know, you can still get vaccinated and test positive. But, you know, the stats lead us to believe that the vaccination, you know, if you're vaccinated, you're less likely to deal with serious symptoms and less likely to pass it along, et cetera, et cetera. The NFL has made its stance clear. You know, for instance, a vaccinated player can like go and, you know, meet with friends and hang out with third parties, you know, during training camp, on road trips during the season. And an unvaccinated player essentially has to sit in the hotel room for the entirety of the road trip. And can
that's like it's 2020 again. It's like they are put right back into whatever it took for us to be able to have an NFL season last year.
Yeah. And then one of the other things that I thought was really big for that the NFL said was unvaccinated players are not allowed to do, to go out in social settings with potential sponsors. So let's say hypothetically Gatorade wants to give a player $10,000 to go do, you know, a Snapchat shoot at some local spot, right? If you're vaccinated, you can make that money. If you're unvaccinated, you can't. And I think that's really where this policy really hits home for these players, is that, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to have a, you know, you have a financial motivation potentially to get the vaccine. And then of course, the NFL, again, it's a bottom line business, and teams are ruthless. If you're on the back end of a roster, and if you're two players on the back end of a roster and one is vaccinated and one isn't, you know, there's a pretty good chance that NFL team is going to pick the vaccinated player, you know, just for a tie break, because at the end of the day, it makes it easier for that team to operate within the construct of the NFL rules.
The sponsor thing is hilarious because the NFL is saying, I'm sorry, our money cannot afford you giving a sponsor COVID, okay? And if you're not vaccinated.
No, it's not even that. No, it's saying like, hey, look, I bet you'd like to make that money, but you can't make it unless. Because you know what I'm saying? It's like, so like Gatorade has certain, use Nike if you want as an example, whoever you want to use. They have certain athletes that do certain promotional stuff for them. Well, that's a side hustle, right? It's a nice side hustle. You and I both love side hustles. you're currently side hustling. You always want to be able to make some of that side money, but the NFL is saying you can't make the side money if you don't have the vaccine. And so for big name players, that's going to be a big issue when it comes to the regular season and when it comes to the preseason and all of that.
He is Will Brinson. You can follow him on Twitter at Will Brinson. Download and subscribe the Pick Six podcast. It's excellent NFL podcast. Will, thank you very much.
You got it, buddy. See you soon.
Ryan Geisinger, accsports.com, League Pass Layer. Follow him on Twitter at bgeis_bird. BG, it's great to hear your voice as a listener of the Adam Gold Show, in addition to being a contributor and today a guest host. I try to time errand runs around when my friends are on, so I'm used to hearing you talk on the Adam Gold Show, but it's great to hear your voice. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. It's been too long. How are you doing?
I'm good. We're having some fun here. Are you? I don't remember from 2016, though. We were working pretty closely together, and that 2016 team was obviously a little bit different in a lot of surrounding circumstances. But are you going at like your Team USA coverage consumption? Are you going at it from like rooting hard, or is it a basketball curiosity? Sort of, what's your avenue as somebody who breaks down basketball at the highest level? You know, does deep dives on draft prospects and really, you know, takes it in as a student of the game. You know, what's your avenue when it comes to Olympic basketball and international competition?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I definitely used to pull pretty hard for the Team USA squads, like even in the World Cup or what used to be the World Championship format, like especially when LeBron and Chris Paul were on those teams in 2008, 2012. Those were super, super fun teams. But I can even remember like pulling fairly hard for 2016 Team USA as well. And even going to the 2019 World Cup team, like definitely wanted to see them do well. But I do think my mode has shifted a fair amount over the last 5 years, where you go from, you know, sort of, you know, fanboying out a little bit, just getting to see all your favorite players together at the same time. And being in North Carolina media and having the team coached by Mike Krzyzewski, like that was a cool thing. But to now, I think just sort of like, looking at things from a little bit more of a granular sort of like X's and O's point of view. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Team USA, win the gold medal, but I won't be like bummed if they don't do that, which I definitely would have been, you know, like watching them in college in 2012 or whatever.
I will be bummed, but it's because the avenue that I've taken is I'm basically hoping that everything on paper is, hey, we've got Kevin Durant. We've got Dame Lillard. We've got like Bam Adebayo as a rim runner. Jason Tatum's on this squad. Like everything on paper, your brain says, this is how good it can be. You know, we get the all-star games. You know, we get these opportunities where we get to see this, up-tempo basketball, shots after shots, and just there's so much offensive talent. And what I saw against France was a group that was just falling short. And that bummed me out. It wasn't like my root, like I didn't have pom-poms, but as someone who I wish that the United States representatives live up to their athletic peak. I mean, for many events, that's what they've been training all the time for. That's not what these individuals have been doing. And it just feels like they're falling well short of their potential.
Yeah, they are. Well, I mean, like it is one game, but given, and their game, France is a good team too, you know, with plenty of NBA players, including an all NBA type level talent like Rudy Gobert. But, you know, it is one game, but Team USA's got probably 12 of the 14, 15 best players in this tournament on the roster. You know, take out Luka Doncic for Slovenia, who he had a big game
48
earlier today. Yeah, it's insane. He's an absurd human being. And then, you know, Gobert too. Like, the other 12 best guys in this tournament are probably on Team USA if I'm not leaving someone else out. Now, the circumstances are certainly weird. Like, Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton, Devin Booker were playing in the NBA Finals less than a week ago. Like, they just got there. It's a very weird NBA season they're coming off of, where a lot of these guys have been going just nonstop since, since the season started in late December. So, you know, the circumstances are weird. I do think what is a little concerning for Team USA, this roster was clearly built on, I think, two things, which is like bucket getters in defense. And so that's why you've got, you know, your bucket guys are Durant, Lillard, Zach LaVine,
Tatum,
Jason Tatum, Devin Booker. And then you've got a lot of like rangy, long defenders that should be able to switch and make plays for you. So Bam Adebayo, Draymond Green, Jeremy Grant. I mean, Jeremy Grant turn into a scorer for Detroit this season too. But I feel like watching some of their exhibition games in the game against France, you're not seeing them find one thing offensively to hang their hat on. And so I think you're getting a lot of like overpassing possessions where they're just moving the defense side to side. There's not enough north-south. And they should have the bucket getters to still make that stuff work. But when the shots don't go in, and they shot just 31% on threes, 36% from the field against France, it can look a little ugly, and you're just going to be relying on your defense to win you games. So like, I think they'll play better. Like, Kevin Durant scoring 10 points on 12 shots and then fouling out. Like, that's an abnormally bad game for him. Damian Lillard scoring 11 points on 10 shots. Like, again, abnormally bad game for Damian Lillard. But they're going to need to find something offensively that's going to be the tent pole for them. And I think they've got to get a lot more aggressive, even if that means like forcing the issue.
I don't think that they are deep enough. And like you mentioned, they are exhausted to go. One of the Mike Krzyzewski-led Olympic team, you know, game plans was everyone's going to play and we're going to run and we're going to defend full court. I don't think that the like current state of these players, as you mentioned, with three just being in the NBA Finals, it was so weird how happy Jrue Holiday makes me right now. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like he just played so well in the Finals, and he played well against France. I hope that he can be a steadying presence for this group. But I don't think this roster is anywhere close to being as good at the like 9, 10, 11, 12 spots as some of those old Coach K teams.
100% not. I mean, like the last guy on the roster in 2012 was Anthony Davis. You know, I mean, it's insane to think about. Now that's JaVale McGee, and like nothing to get, like JaVale McGee's turned into like a perfectly fine NBA player, and like has been, is a winning player now. But like, and I like Keldon Johnson, but the fact that like I like Keldon Johnson as like a dork basketball fan doesn't mean like, you know, he's great as like the 11th guy on the roster in terms of like talent. Yeah, it's a big difference. Again, 2012 had like James Harden and Anthony Davis as like the 11th and 12th guys on that roster. And, you know, those are two of the top 10 players in the world now. So, yeah, it is not quite the same. That said, the fact that Durant is still here, Lillard is here, Adebayo, like Tatum, like this should be enough to do it. But they're going to have to find, like I said, they're going to have to figure out what their identity is offensively, and they're going to have to get a lot more aggressive. And I just think do whatever they can to get north-south and just get pressure on the rim. They need way more of that. They couldn't find the pressure points against France, and they're going to have to figure that out going forward.
So we're going to be dealing, I imagine, with just a very hectic and squashed, and like we're just trying to plow through the offseason on the NBA side. You know, you finally get the season done with. We've got the draft coming up on Thursday night. There's trade rumors will start. We've got free agency coming up as well. In terms of like player movement and the transactional nature of what the next couple weeks are going to be, what are some of the like either like players or storylines that have your attention?
Yeah, there's a lot. This is going to move way too quickly. Like the finals just ended, Olympics are happening, draft, free agency, summer league. Then after that, there should be a little bit of a break, but the next couple of weeks are going to be nuts. I mean, I think Brad Beal, like assuming he actually green lights a trade, which like I feel like there's some conflicting reports on that right now, but he would become the guy, right? He's got one guaranteed year left on his contract and a player option for 22-23. This is someone that, you know, the Sixers are going to want to be in on, or the Celtics, Golden State. If the Warriors could take, they have the 7th and 14th pick in the draft. Could they take those two picks plus James Wiseman and trade for Brad Beal? Like, I don't know if that's enough, unless Washington is really fond of Beal. And if that trade is going to happen, it may need to happen before the draft, which, as you just mentioned, is later this week, because if you're flipping Brad Beal for draft picks that are in 2021, you know, it's got to be so those teams can get the picks and then control them now, as opposed to having someone else draft players for them and having that become, you know, a less valuable asset. Ben Simmons is a name that I feel like we've heard mentioned just a ton the last couple of weeks since the Sixers lost and he played so poorly against Atlanta in the second round of the playoffs. But Simmons has 4 years left on his deal. You know, I'm not sure, like, what's the best return you're going to get for Ben Simmons. Like, I think some Sixers fans would like to think you could build a package for Brad Beal around that. We'll see. And who knows about, like, a Westbrook-Simmons team that doesn't seem really feasible. Portland seems content on bringing it back with Dame Lillard. You know, is CJ McCollum for Ben Simmons, is that enough for you? Like, he helps in some ways, but, you know, you're going to lose a really, really good defensive player, and it's all going to be on Joel Embiid to be the sort of the guy that props up the entire defense, which, like, given what his workload is like offensively, you know, you're asking a lot. So those are some of the things I have an eye on. Like, I'll be curious to see if Simmons does in fact get moved this offseason. Like, I assume he will, but given the nature of his contract, he has 4 years left, not a ton of leverage. I guess you could see the Sixers try to get in on Kyle Lowry in a sign and trade or whatever, bring Simmons back, and then try to trade him during the season. And, like, maybe things go south in Portland and they're looking to move Dame. But yeah, that's what I'm keeping an eye on. Those things, and then I guess Chris Paul's free agency, Kawhi Leonard's free agency too. It seems like, you know, he's going to re-sign in L.A. And I guess Chris would re-sign in Phoenix, but he could opt out, then become a free agent and look for an even bigger bump in pay for next season, which could make things tough for Phoenix when you've got to figure out what you want to do with Cameron Payne. You've got extensions coming up with DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges. So, like, it. You know, it's going to be crazy.
Keep that group together. Monty, keep that group together. Like, Chris came and imparted his wisdom. But listen, he's going to get older and crankier. Like, let's take those gems and those jewels from Chris Paul. Say thank you for blessing this young core with all the lessons that they need for the future playoff runs. But, buddy, was it $45 million or something like that?
Yeah, an $44 million. Dollars. It's crazy.
For someone who's older than me. Like, he's 36. Older. Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. So yeah, it's a lot of interesting storylines, and, you know, because they're talking points now, it's getting hyped up and it seems like there's going to be a lot of crazy stuff that happens, but, you know, it never quite plays out that way, I feel like, but for now it does seem like there are just endless possibilities heading into, you know, a pretty compressed off season.
So Brian Geisinger, accsports.com, League Pass Layer. You can follow him on Twitter at @bgeis_bird. One last question before you go. Not who you think the Charlotte Hornets will draft or what they will do with the number 11 pick, but what would you like to see put on your fan hat for me?
Yeah, assuming they couldn't, like, and I don't think Oklahoma City would entertain this, but assuming they couldn't, like, trade back with 11 to get 16 and 18 picks from the Thunder, like, I don't think that option is available. I don't know why Oklahoma City would do it. And I would look for either Moses Moody from Arkansas. If he were to fall, I don't think Scotty Barnes at this rate is going to fall to 11 from Florida State. So I would look for Moses Moody if he fell to 11. Assuming Moody doesn't fall, there's a lot of guys that I like that we can make cases for that we don't have time for. I would look at Jaden Springer from Tennessee, from Charlotte, one of the youngest guys in the draft this year. Would help them, give them some perimeter defense and a good development piece next to LaMelo Ball. That's what I would do. I don't think that's the direction they're going to go in. But they've got some good options at 11 either way. I think they're going to be able to pick up a player.
I like that Springer call. He struggled at the beginning of the season, then really found himself a little bit later in the year and was playing great basketball by the end of the season. He is Brian Geisinger. Again, you can follow him on Twitter @bgeis_bird. BG, thank you very much.
Yeah, be good, guys.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.